Hello and welcome to the third edition of the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, European desk editor here at RFERL and author of the Power Vertical blog. In the studio with me today is David Kakabadze, director of RFERL's Georgian service. David, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
The topic of today's discussion is Russia and Georgia's stormy relationship and the role that the United States plays, and particularly the U.S. reset with Russia plays in those relationships. Russia's relations with Georgia and how these relations are affected by the American-Russian relationship have been in the news this week with a series of high-level visits. A U.S. Senate delegation led by John Kyle of Arizona visited Tbilisi in an effort to demonstrate Washington's support for Georgia. Meanwhile, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov traveled to the breakaway regions of Abkhazia and South Ossetia. Speaking to RFERL's Georgian service, Senator Kyle stressed that President Barack Obama's efforts to improve ties with Russia should not come at Georgia's expense. Let's listen to what Senator Kyle had to say.
Let me speak from my perspective as a Republican member of the United States Senate. I hope the answer to the question is that we would not sacrifice Georgia's future to some theoretical value of a reset relationship with Russia. The relationship between Russia and the United States should stand on its own, and no country or people should be a pawn in that relationship, sacrificed by the United States because of our desire to have better relations with Russia. Now, that's the way we look at it. I think the administration would express its view in the same way. Whether everyone might interpret its actions as consistent with that might be another matter. But from our perspective, for example, it is important to continue to ensure the security of Georgia. If that means the acquisition of defensive weaponry, then so be it. Georgia would very much like to become a part of NATO. The United States needs to express its support for Georgian security. And the issue of the Russian invasion is not something that sits well with a lot of us. I know some would like to downplay it because it's a matter that exacerbates tensions between the United States and Russia, and nobody likes those tensions, but you have to look at the hard reality as well. So I think the United States can both support its friends and at the same time seek better relations with Russia without sacrificing its friends.
Now, David, this is an issue you and I have discussed quite a bit over the years. And before we get into it again for the podcast, I'd like to just give a quick listen to a brief segment of an interview I recently did with Samuel Cherup, the director of Russia and Eurasia programs at the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C., about these issues. I'd like to add that Mr. Cherup is a supporter of the reset, and this comes out very clearly in his comments.
I think it's important to note that, of course, the same speech in which the reset was announced, which was the Munich Security Conference in February of 2009, was literally, I think, the next sentence where Vice President Biden said that the United States would never recognize Abkhazia and South Ossetia, nor would we recognize spheres of influence. So it was a very conscious effort, at least rhetorically from the beginning, to make clear that the administration doesn't see there as being trade-offs here. A good U.S.-Russia relationship does not come at the expense of really anything else, that's what I think they've tried to do. Now, I think what maybe was missed in the beginning is the degree to which consultation and reassurance would be necessary to get the neighbors on board with that idea, and I think that's an ongoing process.
All right, David, we've got two different perspectives here. On one hand, we have Senator Kyle, a very influential U.S. senator, suggesting that Georgia is at risk of becoming a pawn in the Russian-American relationship, maybe could possibly be sacrificed as America seeks better relations with Moscow. On the other hand, we have Mr. Cherup saying that the administration sees no contradiction here whatsoever and that the reset does not come at Georgia's expense. What I wanted to ask you is, how does this look from the ground in Georgia? How are Georgians looking at this? The reset's not something that was announced yesterday. As Samuel Cherup pointed out, it was announced back in February of 2009. How does the situation look on the ground in Georgia?
Well, Senator Kyle used the term hard reality. I think the people in Georgia look at this hard reality because they have to live with the reality of 20% of their territories being occupied by a neighbor, and nothing is changing in this regard. Russia is building up its military force both in Abkhazia and South Ossetia. This has been the case ever since the war finished in 2008. So the hard reality shows that Russia is very consistent in developing its plan, which has secession of Abkhazia and South Ossetia from Georgia as its goal. So the reality is very tough for Georgians. And even if nobody is against good relations between United States and Russia, most of my compatriots, I think, don't have a real positive feeling for the reset policy, which actually didn't bring much so far.
To play devil's advocate, this situation in Abkhazia and South Ossetia, okay, it's been going on for a long time, but the war and the resulting occupation of Russian forces there took place at a time when Russian-American relations were not very good. But yet, that did not prevent that war from happening. So I guess my question would be, does it matter what the U.S. posture is? Is Russia just going to do what Russia's going to do regardless of how the U.S. stands?
I think we should speak here not just of the United States and its position, because I think that the position of the West in general was not strong enough on that matter before the war, and it is not strong enough after the war. There was no unanimous position with regard to Russia. I think that the West didn't do anything to prevent the war from happening. And whatever we think of the origins of the war, whoever was responsible for that war, this war would not have happened if the West had spoken in one voice and made it clear to Russia that the borders in Europe in the 21st century cannot be changed by force.
Do we have any indication that that message was not delivered? I know the message was delivered to President Saakashvili by then Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice prior to the war, where she, according to my sources, told President Saakashvili that the Russians are going to provoke you. Do not fall for these provocations. I know that message was delivered. Do we know that a message was not delivered to Russia as well?
I think that it was not delivered in Bucharest in April 2008 at the NATO summit when Georgia was denied the membership action plan. So I think that this was a key point for understanding the whole process which broke out after that summit in Bucharest. I think that the Russians took this as a sign that they have a free hand to act. And so they did. End of April, Russia decided to establish direct contacts with the breakaway regions, with the authorities of de facto republics of South Ossetia and Abkhazia. And then, step by step, they went further. And I think that the Bucharest summit, NATO summit, was the start of the process which in the end led to the war.
And it was very clear to anybody that was paying attention that war appeared to be coming. The Russians were having military maneuvers right on the Georgian border. It was those same forces that participated in those maneuvers that spearheaded the invasion. But I guess my point is here is that, and you are right to broaden this out from the U.S. reset policy or the Bush administration's policy towards Russia as it was, into the West policy, because I was in Bucharest, as you know, and I know how hard the United States pushed, and not just the United States, the United States and several of the new member states of the NATO, Poland, the Baltic states, the Czech Republic, pushed very, very, very hard for Georgia to be given NATO membership.
Not only Georgia, but also Ukraine.
Also Ukraine, of course. But the fact of the matter is that NATO operates by a principle of unanimity. And the French, Germans, and Italians, all for different reasons, were deeply opposed to this. And if you get that kind of opposition from three frontline NATO states like that, even if the United States, Great Britain, and several of the smaller countries are favor something, it's hard to get that policy through. So I guess my point is that it's not the reset so much with Russia that is causing Georgia's insecurity, but maybe it's a larger problem of the West, as you suggested. I'm glad you brought that into the equation.
I agree, absolutely. It's not the reset alone, but I'm just telling that reset didn't bring much so far.
Now, I want to bring Sam Charrop back into the conversation here. In our recent interview, Samuel, who, as you know, just recently co-authored a widely read report on the conflicts in Abkhazia and South Ossetia, Samuel makes the argument that improved Russian-American relationship, the reset, is actually making Georgia more secure. Let's listen to Sam.
I think the most specific incident where you can sort of see how the reset has had a positive impact is around the one-year anniversary of the war, when it looked as if we were heading back to open armed conflict. Even at that point, the ties that had been reestablished were good enough to allow the U.S. to intervene at a very senior political level and to put a stop to what might have been a second war. So that's one very concrete example of how Georgia benefited from this new atmosphere in the bilateral relationship. But more broadly, I think, you know, when Russia has something at stake in its relations with the West, and it knows that that can be lost when it does take certain actions, it's less likely to take those actions. And I think that's where we are. Now, that doesn't mean that the territorial dispute and the status dispute will be solved as a result of the reset. But I think there have been concrete benefits and a broader sort of decrease of tensions in the region and change in Russia's threat perceptions that can only be in Georgia's interests.
Now, David, we both remember that summer, and we were both, I mean, as journalists, we're gearing up and thinking another war was coming. In fact, I made a trip to the region for this very reason. We know a war didn't happen. And what Sam's speaking of, this intervention at the highest level, your service reported that, and we found out that there was some intervention at a very high level. I pressed Sam, since he's in Washington and I'm over here in Prague, he's got better access than I do to sources in Washington. I pressed Sam a little bit about just how this intervention from the United States at a very high level took place. Let's listen to what Sam has to say about that.
If you look at news reports around that time, it was very clear that the Russian military was gearing up for something, and then that something didn't happen. And the way U.S. officials talk about it, there were phone calls made that wouldn't have been returned before the reset. There were arguments heard that wouldn't have been under other circumstances. So it's really about the atmospherics allowing change, allowing for different kind of conversations and arguments to be made, and then to have an impact in terms of phone calls being made from Moscow to other places, put it that way.
Now, in addition to phone calls being made to Moscow and other places, we understand that it was actually President Obama himself, during his visit to Moscow in the summer of 2009, who made it very clear in no uncertain terms, both to Prime Minister Putin and to President Medvedev, that this is a red line, that this is a red line that's not to be crossed. Now, the details of that have not come out. The White House, of course, won't confirm because they don't comment on such things. But we do know that President Obama had a rather contentious meeting with Prime Minister Putin, to contrast with his very warm meeting with President Medvedev. So what do you say about that? I mean, Sam's argument is basically that this improved atmosphere between America and Russia allows Washington to influence Russia in ways that it would not be able to do if our relationship was not improved. It gives Russia something to lose. And if Georgia's a red line for the United States, isn't Georgia now more secure, even though the occupied territories are still occupied, even though Russian troops sit, 40 kilometers from your capital city? Despite all of this, the threat of an open shooting war with Russia appears to have receded. Is that a valid point?
I think that the threat is much lower now than it was a year ago. But I'm not sure that the reset policy is to be given credit for that. My understanding is, and the experience shows, that Russia understands the language of power the best when it comes to giving up some ambitions or giving up the idea of occupation or annexation of a neighbor. So I think that Russia would have been much less aggressive had the West used the tools which it could have used, meaning economic sanctions, participation at some international organizations, forums, and so on and so forth. There were a lot of possibilities to do that before the war. I'm going back to the history again. Mm-hmm. Your question was about the present. Yeah. I'm sorry.
But the history is very relevant here.
Of course, that's right. So that's why I think that the policy of reset might sound very nice. It's always good to have nice relations with anybody, with everybody, actually. But the fact is that Russia not only speaks, but it acts. And you mentioned that they have troops 40 kilometers from the capital. Nothing has changed with this reset from this point of view. Even if I agree with you that there is no direct threat of a war and military actions at this point, the fact remains that 1/5 of Georgian territory is being occupied by Russians, and there are no plans whatsoever in the Kremlin to reverse that.
I agree with you that Russia understands the language of strength. Anybody that's spent any time in Russia, anybody that's studied Russia in any serious way, can come to no other conclusion. They very much understand the language of strength, but they also understand the language of incentives, I think.
You think that they don't want to be bad guys all the time?
No, I think that they want respect. They want respect. How many times have you sat drinking with a Russian friend and they said, "Dimenya uvizhaesh"? You know, do you respect me? They want respect. And I think that if you offer them things that can be taken away if they misbehave, then I think this works sometimes even better than the language of strength.
Well, let's
hope. If they know. Well, one of these things is dangling out there right now. The talks in Bern this week for Russia joining the World Trade Organization, which is something Russia very much wants. And this goes to this respectability issue.
Well, you know, Russia doesn't admit that it wants it so much. I mean, the officials say time and again that they are not so much interested in becoming members of WTO, that the West is interested to get Russia into WTO. So actually they say, okay, if you want us, we will be there. But if you don't want us, we don't care. So we don't mind.
Yeah, I think that's a little bit of bluster. Just judging from my reading of the Russian media, they in fact, regardless of what they say, they do. There are many advantages for them in becoming part of this organization, and they're at the table now.
Why would they be negotiating?
And why was Sergei Lavrov? I forget if he made these comments in Abkhazia or
Yes, he did it in Abkhazia, yeah.
Saying that Georgia can't stop Russia from getting into the World Trade Organization,
which is true, actually.
It's true in a very technical sense, yes. But as you've pointed out in the past, the history of this is that the unit has been one of unanimity. And Georgia right now holds a bit of leverage.
I don't know how long it can last, you know, because the pressure, even if nobody admits that the West is pressuring Georgia on that issue, it is clear that the West wants Russia to get into WTO. And how long can a country with 4.5 million population use the tool which it has, still has in its hand? Because WTO doesn't want the precedent to happen when somebody is admitted into the organization not on the basis of consensus, because there are 153 members of this organization, and in the past there has never been a case when a country would have been admitted to the organization without consensus. So all members have to, at least until now it was so, that all members agreed on this or that country becoming a member of WTO. So technically they could admit somebody with 2/3 of majority, as far as I know. But they don't want this to happen, and Russia herself doesn't want to become the first case of this sort, you know. Right. So that's why they are trying to negotiate with Georgia. But Georgia, on the other hand, doesn't want to give up the demand to have monitors, at least monitors, on the crossing points at the border with Russia, which Russia considers Russian Abkhaz and Russian Ossetian borders. Georgia and the international community, with the exception of some minor countries, consider this as Russian-Georgian border. Mm-hmm. So Georgia has to have at least some kind of leverage, or at least the function of monitor, for this process to be transparent, more or less. You know, so this is, I think, a legitimate demand of the Georgian government to be present there.
Well, it seems to be a legitimate demand of any government to have a presence on their own borders.
Exactly.
Now, this might be an area where we might begin to see some movement here, because, I mean, what if the Russians were to agree to that? Now, I'm not saying there's any indication that they will, but what if they were? That would be a very important step, and these conflicts are not going to be resolved overnight, next week, or even next year. This is a matter of decades.
This could be a beginning, then.
This could be a beginning.
But I am very pessimistic on that. I cannot imagine a situation under current Russian leaders, be it Medvedev or Putin, when Russia would reverse the recognition of South Ossetia and Abkhazia as independent states. The position of Russia is very, very firm, and I don't see any prospects for changing this position.
But to get something, you got to give something in this world, and they're going to have to give something. Georgia's not going to give this away for free, nor should they.
You know, there is another issue which Georgia is very much interested in solving. This is the free trade agreement with the European Union, and these talks haven't started yet. So I think that the West is indicating, even if it's not officially said, but I think that the West is telling Georgia, you want to get this, so give up this.
Uh-huh. So Georgia's getting pressure from the other side as well on this.
Even if nobody admits that, you know. Georgia even said, Vashadze, foreign minister of Georgia, just a couple of days ago, said that nobody is pressuring Georgia. The United States is not, neither the Western countries are doing. But I think that the pressure is there.
Many in Georgia will tell you that the real underlying problem between Russia and Georgia is Russia's attitude toward Georgia. the fact that Moscow simply has trouble seeing Georgia as a fully sovereign and independent state. Here's another segment of my interview with Sam Charop, where we kind of go back and forth on that issue. I'd like to get you to react to that. Let's listen to Sam now.
I would also point out that during the Rose Revolution, it was in fact Igor Ivanov, who was then the Secretary of the Security Council, who flew in to negotiate Shevardnadze's resignation.
Yes.
So if you want to talk about Russian interference in Georgia's domestic politics, it also extends to affecting Saakashvili's rise to power.
Because they thought they could control Saakashvili, and then they quickly found out they couldn't.
I don't know what was in his head. I do know that he flew in and negotiated a peaceful end to the political standoff. But there are several levels to this. On the one hand, does Russia have a problem with Georgia's sovereignty as defined by its territorial integrity? Well, they have. Yeah, certainly there's an issue there. But if we take a step back and say, you know, are we talking about does Russia pose a military threat to the rest of Georgia? It could at any moment act on that, yes. But I don't think that's a problem they want, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the sentiment I got when I was in Moscow. And I do think that they recognize that that would be, you know, I mean, why the tanks turned around on August 12th, I think has a whole lot more to do with Russia's own understanding of its interests than anything that the international community or in the person of French President Sarkozy did. But to get to your question, I do think that there's a bit of exaggeration of this issue at the moment going on, that in terms of the rhetoric you often hear from Saakashvili, that the war was about taking him out and that they would want to, that's sort of Russia's goal is to get rid of him. I mean, let's be honest, they could have very easily done that and they didn't. They could do it tomorrow and they, you know, haven't done it in a sense in 2.5 years. So that doesn't mean that ideally, again, maximalist sort of version of how they would wake up tomorrow and be happy if you were gone, maybe that would be to their liking. But, you know, they've learned to live with this to a certain extent. So the truly respect Georgian sovereignty. Part of Russia's post-Soviet transition is about learning to develop relations with its neighbors that are as fully sovereign states. And this is an ongoing process. We see it in fits and starts in other contexts besides Georgia. But let's remember here, this was all one country 20 years ago. So it's not, and the elite that was running the entire thing, many of them are the ones that are now running Russia's foreign policy. So it's not surprising to me that you see these instincts coming out, but I don't think that the question of does Russia respect Georgia's sovereignty within the borders that it says Georgia has is really at issue, if that's your question.
I think it's a broader definition of sovereignty there. I could use a couple of examples. There was a conversation Putin and Saakashvili had on the telephone in the early days after the Rose Revolution, where when they were still talking on the telephone or talking in general, where Putin got quite angry with Saakashvili because he did not want to appoint the person to one of the security ministers that Putin wanted appointed. Putin used some very, very, very colorful language with Saakashvili. Saakashvili used some colorful language in exchange, and Putin got furious and hung up the phone. And the sense was that Putin didn't feel like he was talking to an equal head of state, but to somebody who was below him. It's like he was talking to a governor of one of Russia's, or the first secretary or something like that. That's one example of that. When Saakashvili was in Moscow shortly after the Rose Revolution, and Putin gave him some names and said, take care of these people. In other words, you know, let me appoint your government for you. This is what I mean in terms of respecting. There's this feeling that there is this inherent right to intervene, for lack of a better term. And that they are uncomfortable with any leader in place there. And they even had their problems with Shevardnadze, to be honest, but that will not show sufficient fealty and will not behave like a vassal. This is what I mean.
Like I said, I think that Russian influence on personnel policy in Georgia right now is non-existent.
Exactly.
And I think that they have, to a certain extent, even after the local elections and the strong showing for the UNM in Georgia, the notion that they even can finance opposition is, you know, a farce. So whether or not they like it, it's a fact that a Georgian government that's elected by the Georgian people is not one that is going to be sympathetic to having their ministers appointed from Moscow.
Right.
This is a problem, clearly. And like I said, it's part of Russia's transition, and it's a aspect of it. And there are other things like, you know, the thing that comes up in Washington the most, of course, is choosing your own alliances that evokes this very directly. But I do think that there is one thing to say that look at this nasty phone call and this attempt to sort of meddle in personnel appointment policy in Georgia 5 years ago, and what they're willing to live with now, given current realities and given, I think, their greater understanding about their lack of influence within Georgia, minus South Ossetia and Abkhazia.
Right,
they do
right.
Have, in fact, now a lot of influence with a massive number of troops in both places. I don't think that that is really, I don't see that as the underlying problem, really. It might be something they might, would have, in an ideal world, again, would they like to wake up tomorrow and be able to make those appointments? Maybe. But will they be able to live with a situation where they're not, but they have full relations with an elected Georgian president? I think that there's definitely a possibility for that to happen. There's a lot associated with Saakashvili himself, a lot of emotions in Russia that have not changed since the war to a certain extent. The line now that's repeated endlessly is, you know, we don't have problems with the Georgian people, we have problems with the Saakashvili regime,
mm-hmm.
Which of course demonstrates that they have a problem with the Georgian people, because A, the quote-unquote Saakashvili regime is quite popular, and B, Georgians, even who don't like Saakashvili government, don't like Russians telling them otherwise.
Yeah, the kiss of death in Georgia is being an opposition candidate that's endorsed by Moscow in any way. And
indeed, look at the Nogay Daily's poll numbers.
Right, and if
they're
you look
single digit,
yeah,
it is sort of, you know, the notion that Georgia can go on with no relations, with no formal diplomatic relations, and limited trade with a country of 140 million on its borders does seem a bit bizarre, really, when it comes down to it.
So what about that, David? I mean, is this the underlying problem, that Russia simply doesn't respect Georgia's sovereignty? Is this really at the base of the issue, or is there something else here?
Well, how can we speak about respect of Georgian sovereignty with the situation we have on the ground? It's just absurd to talk about any kind of respect. If you occupy the territory of a neighbor, you don't respect the sovereignty of him.
And in a deeper sense, though, this feeling that there's this right to intervene and to control events in Georgia to the extent that
Russia doesn't want to give up this right, yes.
Right.
And to go back to the issue of WTO, I wonder what would have happened if Russia were member of WTO and all post-Soviet states were not. How many of those post-Soviet states would become member of WTO if Russia had this leverage to accept them or not?
You mean that they would not have allowed them in, or it would have extracted serious concessions from
exactly.
them? Well, it's probably a good thing that the international community got the other states into the WTO before
That's right.
Russia. I don't know if that was by chance or design. Now, another point Sam makes here is that this is a process. This is an empire that dissolved, and that it is psychologically difficult to get over the fact that you don't control your former colonial holdings. Is this just a problem of time?
I think it is a problem of time, because I think that a time comes when, I don't know, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, when Russia will have different leaders. And those leaders will come to the decision that you cannot act as you have acted during the Tsarist Empire, during the Communist Empire, and that if democracy is the goal we are aspiring, then you cannot use the means which are being used by the current leaders of Russia.
So. Now, we've had three post-Soviet presidents now, and each one of them, including Boris Yeltsin, could not give up this narcotic of intervening in their neighbors' affairs.
But they all come from the Soviet Union. They are all so-called Savki. But the new generation I'm talking about is somebody which is being born now, maybe, or will be born in 10 years. So it will be a completely different situation then.
The last question I wanted to leave us with here is that going back to the U.S.'s role in all of this, is it conceivable that a closer U.S.-Russian relationship can itself facilitate a rapprochement between Georgia and Russia? Because now Georgia won't be alone at the table in this situation. There's going to be another player involved. Is that something we could possibly look to?
What we witness right now is that the United States does not want to overtake, officially at least, overtake the function of a mediator. It is always underlining that the United States is only trying to talk to both sides, to somehow to facilitate even their meetings, maybe here and there, but not officially acting as mediators. I would wish very much that these changes in the future, and the United States plays a more active role in those processes which are going on right now. Otherwise, I don't think this relation between Georgia and Russia will get any better in the near future.
So the U.S. would be the key to improving
it? I think so. U.S. with Western partners in Europe. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's all we have time for today. Just to remind you that you've been listening to the Power Vertical podcast. You can read the Power Vertical blog at www.rferl.org or follow us on Twitter at @Twitter/PowerVertical. And now I'll leave you with the music of my favorite socially conscious Russian rapper, Noize MC.